It's a time where members of the public can address this board for non-agendized items. I have a few speaker cards. If there's anybody else that would like to address anything that's not on the agenda, please pick up a speaker card and get it to Patty. I have four cards at this time, the first being Ms. Anne Maurice.
Anne Maurice, Ad Hoc Committee for Clean Water. There are two treatment plants in trouble in West County. One of them you'll be discussing later on in the agenda. That's the Russian River Wastewater Treatment Plant. Both of the treatment plants in trouble are run by the Sonoma County Water Agency. The other one, which I want to speak to off agenda, is the Occidental Wastewater Treatment Plant. You've got already proposed by your executive officer and the enforcement division a $57,000 fine for Occidental for about, I think it was 155 violations since about 2012, 19 of which were above interim standards and required mandatory penalties. Well, in light of that, since you have land disposal problems in Guerneville, what surprises me and what I want to put to the water agency and to the board, why, when we were discussing what to do about Occidental and the potential EIR, why did they propose sending Occidental's wastewater to the Guerneville treatment plant when they must know, and certainly you know, that there are serious problems in Guerneville? So that's a rhetorical question, actually, because we were really astonished and thought that should be absolutely out of the question. Is it the only alternative? Why no? As you probably know, because we sent a report to your staff, the Ad Hoc Committee for Clean Water and others got together, decided that this has been going on for too long, for at least 20 years, 25, 20, 30 years, where there's no solution for Occidental. Okay, that was the current thought, and people would say, no, well, to continue discharging, it's going to be $25 million is what we heard, to get Occidental up to tertiary treatment. Well, what did we find? For $1.5 million today, not 20 years ago, $1.5 million today, under $1.5 million, tertiary treatment plus ultraviolet is available for Occidental. So there is no need to get it complicated with the Guerneville Wastewater Treatment Plant. The $1.5 million would cover, say, plus, let's add a little more for land preparation and so forth. But we haven't heard of any forward movement with regards to this idea yet from the water agency, even though we submitted our plan last December. So quickly, I want to switch to the blue-green algae. As you know, that was a problem for Toledo and caused toxicity and major wastewater, drinking water problems. I want to alert your staff and the board to the idea of looking at a biological solution. Are you aware of barley straw being used traditionally by farmers? This may be a technology that we've lost because we're urbanized and have lost touch with our agrarian ancestors, and that barley straw has been used to suppress algae, and it's been used very effectively, and a simple Google search will turn you onto this, and the public, as well as your researchers and assistants and collaborators, should take a look at it. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne Maurice. Any comments or questions? Thank you. The next card I have is Mr. Dwayne DeWitt.
Hello, my name is Dwayne DeWitt. I'm from an area called Roseland in southwest Santa Rosa. And in the past, I had come here often to speak about the McMinn Avenue State Superfund site and what are called brownfields. The area that I'm from was actually the heart of a problem called commingled plume, where the underground aquifer was being contaminated by pollutants that came from a leaking underground sanitary sewage system. That's been repaired, but the perception of my area, Roseland, still being a state Superfund site exists. I was told that someone from Oakland had come down here and convinced you didn't need that designation anymore, and that the designation went away. But people in the community don't really know, and we still labor, if you will, under a bad reputation. personally, I love Roseland, and it's a really nice place, and we've got some really good natural areas, and that's one of the things I came to talk about. One is Roseland Creek. And for a number of years, I've been working to help to preserve a riparian corridor along the creek, and the Agricultural Open Space District has kindly helped to fund the purchase of 17 acres along Burbank Avenue at Roseland Creek. So the taxpayers have taken the step, and they've moved forward, if you will, to help with this nice area. And I think it could be helpful to us in these drought times to think about the possibilities of these riparian corridors in urbanized areas, if you will, to be the potential for stormwater retention basins, and to look into how you could really do some forward thinking about just saving the water you might get from rain in the future. The term for some of this is called urban forestry and urban greening, and I've taken some time to look into that deeper. And I know that there's funding available to do things along riparian corridors if we can get a kind of partnership going. And unfortunately, that's never worked well yet with Roseland. City, county, state, federal agencies, it's all been kind of a mixing pot that never melted, if you will. We didn't get the melting pot that we might have with population. We just got jurisdictional agencies and silo city. So it's become a bit difficult. I thought maybe now's the time to take the words of Pat Mulroy, who I just saw in the little booklet about the Water Agency's state convention. I met her 5 or 6 years ago down in Las Vegas and talking at a planning convention, and she thought everything was fine. But now I see in this latest book, she's got a great quote. We have to start thinking differently. She's paying attention to droughts and water conservation and all types of things. So I'd ask you to perhaps take her call, if you will, and think differently about Roseland and cooperating. Get some stormwater retention along the Roseland Riparian Corridor. I'm looking forward to meeting the staff that are new to me, and I hope to see you again in the future. Thank you for your time.
Duane, before you leave, can I ask you a question? Is there, as I indicated, you were up here speaking before we started, and I indicated you, I've worked a lot as a consultant in that area working on sites, and I did some work on Roseland School and some of the other areas down there. It's an interesting area from the standpoint of governance. It's county islands that are somewhat remnants of those days when the city expanded into that area. It has a cultural renaissance going on. It's a vibrant part of our city, and there's potential for annexation. At least that's on the table right now. Are you aware of any like organization that to get back to? Are you organized as a community to? Because I'm aware of the fact that this agency, in fact, was on the front end of the designation and identification of the issues as relates to toxics, both the HVOC plume down there and the underground tanks, and how that McMinn Superfund area got formed. Bill Erdai in this office was a longstanding staff person that actually was key in that, and then carried on from there. Is there, though, a group that we could get back to and interact as an agency? Because I agree with you. I think it's time to revisit and just kind of re-up where we at and assess as it relates especially to the McMinn designation.
20 years ago, I met Bill Erdai. I have a group called Roseland Action that I work with. I work with other community organizations out there. We helped to get the, at that time, one of the larger fines put on to Acme Auto Wreckers for their groundwater pollution that they were responsible for and had never stepped up on. My phone numbers stayed the same. My post box is the same for 20 years. I basically do the best I can to stay in touch with folks, but when staff changes and different things occur, we kind of fall by the wayside. As I can tell right now, the only person left from those days is Stephen Bergston, perhaps I pronounce it wrong. And we're still down there trying. We've got the Roseland neighborhood, we call that. That's okay. 17 acres. Let's move forward.
Great. Well, let's talk again in the future. I'll follow through with staff on our side, and let's meet in the middle and have a conversation and see where it goes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully come to meet Mr. St. John, and we can all have nothing but a good time.
Thanks, Duane.
Thank you.
Let the record reflect that Mr. John Corbett, chair of this board, is here, and I will turn over from here.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Those are done. Those are pending.
Okay, thank you. Next speaker is Felice Pace.
Good morning. Felice Pace speaking for the project to reform public land grazing in Northern California. The project is in its fifth year of monitoring public land grazing on the Klamath. We're concentrating on the Klamath National Forest. We work real closely with Fred and the Nonpoint staff, Fred Blatt of your staff, and the whole Nonpoint crew. And we've been trying to encourage the Forest Service and the grazing allottees to collaborate in this reform because of what we've been seeing. And part of it, I'm going to refer to this in a minute, but part of it is the Quartz Valley Indian Reservation, which has been water quality testing in the streams, draining these wilderness allotments, grazing allotments, and last year came up with E. coli violations of the basin plan. For about 5 years, they've been coming, 6 years, 7 years, they've been coming up with problems. What we do in the project is we go out onto the ground and we document those, what's creating those problems, the kind of management problems on the ground that create the water quality problems that the testing is picking up. And then we try to work with the permittees. This is 20 years of best management practice monitoring, a graph of the results of 20 years. It's a little small. I don't know if we can blow it up or not, but 20 years of monitoring BMPs, which is done with a random sample. And it compares the BMP implement the effectiveness in the second column of the grazing of all BMPs to the effectiveness of all the grazing BMPs by year for those years. And the average is down the bottom. And what you can see is that all BMPs, that the grazing BMPs have been 57% effective, but all BMPs have been 94% effective. And 57% is not a passing grade in any place I've ever gone to school. This is poor performance. What we're doing right now is we're doing this analysis at the state level because we're going to have a state, what they call RAP, that's supposed to take on grazing public and private statewide. And what we've been discovering as we've gone, and if you could go down to the photos now, that'd be great. What we've been discovering as we've delved into this, this is the kind of management, this is a spring on the Klamath National Forest, the Big Meadows allotment, and it's trampled. And there's hundreds of springs in these this particular meadow system. I've found one once over 5 years of monitoring that hasn't been trampled. So, you know, we have a lack of active management on the ground that we feel we need out there, rotating the cows among the areas, because if you don't rotate them, they find places they like and they stay there and trash the place. It's a riparian area, very similar. The willows have been pushed back, and we've lost the shade on the stream, and it's trampled, and so forth. So we're now doing the BMP analysis at the state level. There's a lot of indications in the data so far that there are problems with the BMPs, and we're going to be trying to work at that state level to improve these BMPs, get them a little more specific than where they are, and actually figure out a way to improve this performance. And the way to do that, I'm convinced from being on the ground, and I've been walking these wilderness areas, and I know a lot of the guys that run the cows and the women, by the way, who run the cows, some of the best permittees management-wise are women. And we need more active management on the ground, herding. And that's what all the guides tell you that we need. So I just wanted to give you a little update, say we're trying to get work with Fred and get you guys to also encourage the Forest Service to engage in some reform.
Okay. Board member questions? No, I have one if no one else does. Can you go back to your chart?
Sure.
And the key one that you had directed us to was all grazing BMPs percent fully effective. Is that correct?
Yes.
When I look at that chart, what strikes me is an incredible variation. It goes down to 0% effective, to 100% effective, to 25. And that suggests either the samples are small, there's a change in who's measuring it, or the criteria aren't very clear, or, I mean, what do you think is causing that level of movement?
The samples are small. There's each year, this is done statewide, right? This is their CWA compliance. It's the independent monitoring. And the sample is small. There's, on the Klamath National Forest for grazing in any one year, there could be 4 to 6 sites that they visit. And that's one of the reasons why now we're going to the state level. But talking to the state Forest Service water quality people, we're pretty sure we're finding the same thing. We just haven't got all the numbers crunched yet.
Okay. Any other board member questions? Okay. Next speaker.
Thanks very much.
Is Brenda Adelman. Adelman, rather.
Good morning. I don't know if you're keeping time, but it may take me a few more minutes. I'll try and be concise. But I had distributed some photographs. I'm sorry, Brenda Adelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. And I had distributed a brief statement to the board about some concerns I have about irrigation overflow in urban areas. And I had been visiting quite a few sites in Santa Rosa and Roner Park on approximately 7 different occasions and taking hundreds of photographs. What I found is I was there between 7 and 8 in the morning in every case, and found that most of the systems weren't operating because they're being told to irrigate in the night, evening and nighttime. That is a concern to me because almost no and maybe no inspections take place at that time. So it's entirely conceivable that any inspections of the system take place many, many hours after it's been shut off. There are supposed to be, I think some pictures have been distributed and some were you should have gotten by email. I just want to point out several problems I had. Every single site that was turned on, and I managed to see 2 or 3 at least in each visit, had overflow where water was running over the sidewalks and the streets. And in some cases, it was very significant. In one case, it was quite a bit of ponding right near a bus stop where children might have access to it. Signage is a big problem. There's supposed to be signs that alert the public to the fact that this is not regular potable water being used. And yet I found most of the sites did not have any signs. And the pictures indicate there was one good sign I saw out at Sonoma Mountain Village, and that was the only one. All the others were either not existent or teeny tiny signs in locations where it was just very hard to see in colors that were not very prominent. The force of the spray was so great that very often the spray was blowing all over the place, and I myself was personally sprayed on several occasions in the process of trying to get pictures. And very often the same sites were the ones that were over-irrigating, and I know in looking at the data on the annual reports, I consistently saw a certain site showing up all the time, and that's just kind of unforgivable. I also had noticed that certain sites use what seems to be a very large amount of water, and I don't for the size of the site, and I am not sure that agronomic rates are being adhered to, especially in urban areas. I'm concerned that although there's a need to offset potable water use, the economic reality is that during a drought, there's very little wastewater available. So Santa Rosa's storage curve is now the amount of wastewater they have in storage is below their minimum storage curve. So they're making deals now with irrigators to use less water, the agricultural people. So they're having problems with that. So the millions of dollars that are needed to put in irrigation systems in urban areas is not necessarily money well spent.
And then, Brenda, I'm going to ask you to sum up. And I do think this would be good material for a letter to us.
Well, I did put a summary on a page.
Yeah.
I have one more comment to make, and then I'll wrap it up. There is a governance issue that will be coming up next year when, in March of 2015, the city of Santa Rosa will be turning over all irrigation responsibilities to the city of Rohnert Park, who is using Santa Rosa wastewater, for which Santa Rosa is legally responsible for the use of that wastewater under their NPDES permit. And I don't think the details of that have been worked out in terms of liability for runoff. There's enormous amount of nutrient problems in the Laguna, in the Russian River. So the combined effect of all these small discharges, I have many pictures of the water going into drainage. And even though it's not huge amounts of water, I'm guessing, I don't know that for sure, I don't think anyone knows that. Nevertheless, it may be having a huge impact because of the low flows and the drought. And later on, I'll show multiple pictures of huge problems of in both the Laguna and tributaries to the Laguna, nutrient problems and terrible algae problems that could possibly even be toxic algae. I don't know. Thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
For one, Brenda, I want to thank you. You've always been a consistent voice to us of somebody as a citizen out here in looking at this. And we adopted permits, recycled water, with the intent of allowing and supporting the use of recycled water. That's the state policy. That's our policy. The bargain in that, though, in that permitting is that it requires management. In fact, I made the comment in the adoption of Santa Rosa and Windsor, specifically those are the two most recent permits that we've had, is that this does require management. And I would like to ask some follow-up on this, because this has been a fairly consistent message that we've heard, not only from you but from others. I would like to ask staff then to follow up. This is actually kind of a pyramid scheme, because in reality we have a master reclamation permit and then the permittees after that that are the end users. There's management practices and BMPs that are out here. There's a built environment, and there's the infrastructure that goes with it, and then there's the practical sense of how this gets done. I would like to ask, though, that I would like to have some follow-up by the permittees about what are the primary causes of the runoff and overspray here, and what management is being invoked to minimize this. Are the BMPs being followed? And I would like to ask further that we have recommendations from them and some analysis from them about how this is being done, and go and start from there. And I'd like to have some report back on that in the near future as that information becomes available.
Could I make one more quick comment? I appreciate that, and I just want to say that most of the people are irrigating properly, is my guess from what I could see, and if it's just a matter of identifying the bad actors and working with them and not necessarily having to look at every single site once you determine who the bad actors are.
Well, I picked up in your testimony that it was repeats showing a pattern, which does suggest bad actors. I think that would be very helpful to get who that is to staff or where it is.
And Brenda,
I'm willing to work with staff on that.
Fantastic. Can I ask, too, that you be sure and put it in writing and give us any documentation that you have, and we'll start there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I believe that concludes the public forum. I wanted to reopen ex parte and